here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems, and the people they touch.
I'm Emmanuel Berry.
And I'm Tim Lloyd.
And from St. Louis Public Radio,
this is We Live Here.
Seeing that I go to a 97% African-American school, it's kind of hard to, like, get on the other side of the spectrum and get opinions there.
Honestly, we don't talk about race that much because our school is prominently white, and so it's never really talked about formally. It's joked about as it towards people.
All right, so that's Tiana Bass and Kyle Edwards.
He's a junior at the mostly white Sekman High School in South St. Louis County, and she's a senior at the predominantly black Hazelwood East High School in North St. Louis County.
I've worked with white people. I've been around white people. I've just never actually, you know, gotten a chance to sit down and talk to somebody who's not like, looked like me.
On this episode, Growing Up Apart.
How what kids see in school can shape their ideas about race.
So the kids you heard at the top of the show, Tiana and Kyle, who were saying they don't really talk about race, did actually talk about race here.
Back in January, a whole bunch of students from across the St. Louis region crammed into a convention center.
Markers, poster boards, empty soda cans, selfie taking.
You know, usual high school stuff, and the kids here are pretty stoked.
After all, they did get out of class for the day.
Yeah.
But don't let that fool you. They're doing some heavy lifting.
Last episode, we told you how the legacy of racist housing policies and St. Louis County's jigsaw puzzle of 90 municipalities means a lot of the time, white, black, rich, and poor people don't live next to each other.
Well, just like many communities in and around St. Louis, not that many schools have racially diverse student bodies. And the students in this room are out to hack that system.
Yeah, basically find ways to help young people like themselves connect across deep and historic racial divides.
Here's how the day went down. Students formed teams to come up with ideas about how to deal with the topics that adults, well, have a hard time talking about.
Things like how white and black people talk to each other, implicit bias, and racial profiling.
Solutions students came up with included mentorship programs, more classes on diversity, and continuing to hold race summits like the one they're attending. Then they pitched their ideas at the end of the day and voted on what they thought was the best solution.
And the winning plan came from...
That was a sad drumroll, Tim.
Fair enough. The students we met at the top of the show, Tiana and Kyle's group.
Sekman and Hazelwood East are trying to, like, get the 8 students that came to the student summit to swap schools and basically take a day in the life of that student at that school. So, say, me and Kyle, we will switch positions for a day.
And what she's talking about here is basically a student exchange program.
They would get the feel of how it would feel to be in a predominantly black school, and I would get the feel of how it would feel to be in a predominantly white school.
I mean, I have to say this room is full of a lot of good vibes, and this plan looks great on paper.
It does, but Tiana says, you know, things could get weird when this exchange actually happens.
Am I getting glared at by all the people who I don't look like? Or are they getting glared at by all the people who they don't look like?
Let's push pause for a second.
Yeah, I mean, this is public radio, and we don't do anything without consulting someone with a PhD.
It's required.
We cannot do a story without a PhD.
Yes, it would be blasphemy if we did not, against our code of ethics, rule book, all of those things.
So now is a good time to introduce you to our PhD for the show.
My name is Rodolfo Mendoza Denton, and I'm an associate professor of psychology at UC Berkeley. I study the psychology of prejudice and intergroup relations, stigma, and education.
So what's that mean, I guess, if you were explaining it to somebody, you're having a beer with them? What would that, how would you explain it?
Oh, basically how people from different groups get along and how people function in learning environments within that context.
Cool.
We'll get back to the exchange in just a minute. But first, we wanted to ask Mendoza Denton his thoughts on the idea. And he says, you know, in terms of textbook ways to deal with racial understanding, an exchange program between a mostly black school and a mostly white school isn't a bad place to start.
In fact, Mendoza Denton says it ties in with this whole theory of exposure that by no means is just limited to race relations.
Certainly advertisers know this, who want you to become familiar with their products so that when you see them in a supermarket, you'll be able to say, oh, I recognize that particular brand, and I think I'll buy it because I've heard of it before as opposed to this other brand that you may not have heard of.
In other words, you can think of it this way.
Familiarity breeds liking. To the degree that I am more exposed to a particular product, to a particular person, to a particular thing, I am more likely to be comfortable with that particular stimulus object and more likely to trust it, to interact with it in some way.
So in other words, this whole idea of a school exchange really boils down to this idea of building familiarity.
That conference where this idea was hatched was in January. It's now March, and just recently, students from Hazelwood East, a mostly black high school in North St. Louis County, traveled south to Jefferson County to spend a day at the mostly white Seckman High School. Your guide for this exchange, Hazelwood East senior Justin Mason.
Well, if this audio sounds like crap, I'll try again when I'm inside the building.
And to be honest, you know, not all of the audio is that great. It was recorded on a cell phone.
Yeah, and it's a little painful for us because we are total, like, public radio audio nerds. But we decided to make an exception, right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. You know, because we're gonna let it go because you can kind of still understand what's going on and what you're hearing. And, you know, he's letting us into his day. He's sharing these really intimate moments that, to be honest, are hard to capture when you're following someone around with a microphone.
Oh, totally. And so we asked Justin to record his life to keep a radio diary the day before and the day of his visit to Seckman.
Justin is a pretty busy guy. He's the Secretary of Student Council, President of Spartan TV. He does robotics. He's on the student leader board.
That's a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, and he also does track. The day before the exchange, he was running late to practice because of all his other extracurricular responsibilities.
Well, it is 2:53. Walking to the track on a blacktop path. I'm super late. I got to run 4 laps when I get on that track.
Justin was really excited about the exchange.
First recording, 7 o'clock, sitting in the back of the bus, looking out the back windows. We're at the school bus. We're heading south on 270, heading to Seckman. Well, my initial thoughts on Seckman, I just know when I get there, I know they're going to be cheating us.
If you couldn't exactly make that out and only heard the constant hum of a school bus, Justin said he and the other students from Hazelwood are heading to Seckman on a bus in the morning and that he thinks that students at Seckman will treat them differently.
Yeah, but you were telling me, though, that as you were texting back and forth with him that day, that that wasn't actually what happened.
I texted Justin, okay,
right,
first.
You should clarify.
Clarify. I texted him once just to check in, and he replied that, you know, he had nothing bad to say about Seckman and that most of what he captured during that day spoke to that positive experience.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what he found more than anything was that Seckman students were just curious, right? That they just wanted to know about him, about life in another school.
Yeah, he said during this one class period, you know, students just launched question after question at him. And it was mostly mundane stuff, you know, like how many students go to your school? You know, how does your ID system work? Yeah. One student asked him, you know, what is it like in the halls at Hazelwood East?
When we walk through the halls here, it's like there's empty. But if you walk through the halls at our school, you'll see like at least 10 people, like in every single hall.
You know, I was listening back to the tape while we were getting ready for this show, and it seemed to me, I don't know if you picked up on this too, but about 20 minutes into this conversation between Justin and all these students at Seckman asking him a bunch of questions, that there was this kind of trust that started to get built. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah. After, you know, asking a bunch of kind of relatable questions, they really felt comfortable around each other, and they started talking about more serious things in a way. And one of the things brought up was race.
Yeah, there was one moment where a student asked Justin if the few white students who do go to Hazelwood East fit in at school.
I guess they don't want to fit in. Like, if they want to hang with us, they hang with us. But I think they want to, like, separate. They're like, oh, we white, we can go do this. I don't have to hang with you and stuff.
On the way back to Hazelwood East at the end of the day, and they're on the bus here, so just a reminder, the audio isn't that great. Justin says the thing that surprised him the most was just how friendly everyone was.
Yeah, Justin's partner for the day at Seckman, his guide, if you will, was a student named Kyle. And you'll remember Kyle because we met him at the very beginning of the show at the Student Race Summit.
So what surprised me the most, when we first got there in the first passing time, Kyle went to his locker and he started introducing me to all his friends. And then we just stood there for a couple moments, and almost every second, somebody else came up and said their name and introduced it to me. And it was like every second, it was like, hi, I'm so-and-so. Hi, I'm so-so. Hi, I'm so-so. And I was just so surprised because at East, that would never happen. At East, no one would come up and introduce themselves to you. Everybody wanted to know how to get in that club, how to get in this program and stuff. And they wanted to do this sisterhood swap school thing. J-Dog, Hazuti's High School senior. I'm out.
Now's a good time to bring back our expert, Rodolfo Mendoza-Denton, who studies race relations at UC Berkeley.
He says the whole idea of the swap is a nice idea. It's a good first step. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if the goal is to build racial understanding here, you have to do this type of thing a lot.
Like a whole lot.
It has to be sustained. Simply going for a day is not going to, address really at a deep level issues of implicit bias, issues of stereotyping, issues of disconfirming negative stereotypes that may be there.
You know, we're not the only people taking a look at how the past few months might have changed the way some students talk about race.
I'm Jane Bannister, and I work for the Rittner School District, and I teach media.
My name is Will Rivers. I'm a student at Rittner.
Yeah, what year are you?
I'm a junior.
I'm Brandon King. I'm a senior at Rittner High School.
The school actually has its own radio station with an FCC license. And the students are reporters, DJs, etc. They do a bunch of multimedia stuff, video, photos, web stories.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty cool school, someplace I would have maybe liked to go.
Yeah, their studios are pretty sweet.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, these are kids who love radio journalism, which means that we kind of have a soft spot for them.
Yes, we sure do.
Yeah.
But enough gushing. There's something else you need to know about Rittner. It's one of only a handful of schools in the St. Louis area that actually has racial diversity. The student body is 43% Black, 38% white, and about 13% Hispanic.
And that is rare.
Yes.
So this past fall, Jane, the teacher, and her class of reporting upstarts had a pretty big story in their backyard. But at first, she wasn't sure about covering it.
When we started the school year, we were like, we're not really going to dabble in Ferguson. I mean, it's a hotbed issue here in St. Anne. We're about 13 miles, our school district, from Ferguson. Really, could we handle that? And kind of we're like, we're not really going to deal with that. But, you know, basically it just, whether we liked it or not, you know, we had to deal with it. I don't think necessarily it really hit us about what we could do until the grand jury decision.
They determined that no probable cause exists to file any charge against Officer Wilson and returned a no true bill on each of the five indictments.
No indictment.
No indictment.
No,
no indictment.
No indictment.
I can't tell you what went through my mind, but what went through my heart was pain and grief.
And we're angry, but I just want everybody to keep the peace. Please, guys, keep the peace.
What I've seen tonight is probably much worse than the worst night we ever had in August, and that's truly unfortunate. I said several months ago during an interview, what would be the worst thing that could possibly happen? And the fact of the matter is, I said, to tear the fabric of this community apart. And frankly, that has happened here tonight. There's not a lot left on West Florissant between Solway and Chambers.
Watching that moment, I really felt like we had to do something. We have a radio station. We capture stories. And so we decided we were going to do the job of capturing the teen story.
So what are these stories that you're hearing from teens, these voices that you guys are capturing?
For example, I had the chance to interview a girl from Sekman High School. She was basically talking about how her mother's side is more like racist. And she said her father's side, they're more like optimistic and they look for the better in people. And so being from that household where you have those two different mindsets, she said it's like conflicting.
Because when your mom has something to say and your dad has something to say and you have totally different opinions from both of them. And I was always taught to be myself and never to go on anything else anybody says, but it's hard coming from that household that always has something to say bad, and you're just trying to think positive and trying to move forward, not backwards.
That was Nina Miskovic, a sophomore at the mostly white Sekman High School. And surprise, surprise, like most of the teenagers interviewed by students at Rittner, she thinks adults, they have it all wrong.
Of course.
We have to start with the younger kids to influence the parents, because obviously the adults, they don't know how to handle situations as maturely as us students and leaders as young adults are trying to handle it.
What about you, Brandon? What stuck out to you?
Definitely just like different people's stories, how you never would think all this stuff really happens until you really hear about it. There are stories saying how like police actually like really do treat them differently. They could get pulled over for no reason at all. Nothing.
Who's the they you're talking about right now?
Anybody who's like African-American. They are telling stories how like they've gotten pulled over for just walking on down the street. There's this one guy, he was saying how just got out of school, and he was saying a cop pulled him over for a suspect in a robbery or something, a stolen bike or something, something real real small. And he was saying how he matched the description, but he was saying how he just got out of school, and he couldn't possibly be it, but the cop questioned him for like an hour about it and everything.
Let's take a step back. Brandon is white, Will is black, and the two of them are close friends.
So let that sink in. Brandon's saying he didn't understand what many minorities say is a painful and unfortunately common experience, that they feel unfairly targeted by law enforcement.
But Brandon is going to a racially diverse school, so what gives?
Now would be a good time to bring back our PhD for this episode, Rodolfo Mendoza-Denton. He says even when an environment looks super diverse on paper, that's not a guarantee people are actually talking about race.
Absolutely. I think you're making a distinction here between what researchers call numerical diversity versus relational diversity. There are very strong social forces, both within the community and outside of the community, that conspire to keep those communities apart, including the sense that, well, maybe that group doesn't actually really want to talk to me. And that's a common misconception that people from multiple groups have about each other.
And Mendoza-Denton says one way to get around this is group activities, sports teams, school plays.
Or a journalism class, much like the one that our friends at Rittner High School are in.
Which gets us right back to this idea of common goals and interdependence.
And it wasn't until the students in the journalism class at Rittner were preparing to report on the race summit we told you about at the start of the show that they started talking about how different their experiences actually were.
Normally those conversations would come up during like preparing for asking those questions. We go over questions and come up with questions. Miss Bannister, she had asked us about the question about there being a social divide in St. Louis, and we were like, yeah, we kind of agreed on that. And when she came to the question about white privilege, the white students in the class were like, no, there's no such thing as white privilege. That's just something made up. And then the black students were like, yeah, there really is, though. When you start asking the questions, that's when the conversations arise.
Part of your home life, do you guys, you and your mom, your family, you guys talk about race?
Yeah. I mean, it's been going on lately a lot more because, you know, the situation just going on, but we talk about it every now and then.
It's just like, if it comes up, it comes up. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it's not no,
topic.
Yeah. It's not like a main topic that we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm.
I feel that other people were just like, oh my God, white officer killed black guy. Like, okay, this happened in many other cases. What's special about this? Yeah, the guy was known. Yeah, he was in our city. It's mournful, and I understand. It's hard to deal with a loss. But you just gotta know that he was doing his job and he did everything right in his power.
We try to develop slang from my school, and we try to not make it racist, but it actually is racist, and people don't realize that, and that's bad. It's sad because people don't see how it affects somebody, and they just continue saying it until that person is hurt or doesn't feel good about themselves.
And I have been stopped by police when I'm walking down the street to ask me where I'm going. If I'm wearing all black, I'm getting racially questions asked to me, like, am I finna go rob a store or am I finna do this? Why are you racial profiling me just because of my color of my skin or the clothes I wear? But if there's a white person walking behind me with all black, but they're white, that police don't stop that white person to ask them questions.
In order, that was Malik Smith, a senior at McClure North High School.
And Nick Rosario, a sophomore at Hazelwood Central. Both of their schools are mostly black.
We heard again from Nina Miskovic and Chris McClellan, a sophomore at McClure North High School.
Collecting interviews like these has gotten the students at Rittner their fair share of social media clout, as well as local news coverage. So we had to ask.
You know, you've been collecting all these stories.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the effect on you at school, the way teachers or other students treat you at school?
I was walking down to go to an assembly, and I had got stopped by one of the teachers because she said my pants were sagging, which they were not.
Did she know about all the stuff you'd been doing
project? Yeah, so she had brought that up. She was like, why are your pants sagging? And I've seen you over there interviewing the governor. You're not representing the school in a good way. First, I was like, my pants are pulled up because I had the belt on. And then also, if my pants were sagging, I had a very long shirt on. I had to, like, check for myself to make sure my pants were pulled up. So I kind of looked. I was like, what?
Did you pull up your shirt?
And then I showed her. I was like, look, my pants are pulled up, to kind of, like, prove to her that my pants were pulled up. I didn't really like the fact that I had to prove to her that I was right about my pants being pulled up. I know this teacher. Any other day when I walk past her, before, like, I got to interview the governor and stuff, she doesn't say anything.
But you didn't just interview the governor, because I was there that day,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
What was the question you asked him?
I asked him...
You asked him about race, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said, Mr. Governor, so I told him this. This was the exact question. I said, Mr. Governor, I had the chance to go to Ferguson Commission, and I spoke with a team by the name of Clifton
Kinney. And one of his biggest concerns was that of his younger sister and trying to explain to her the events that are happening in St. Louis. How do we help the younger generation, such as the generation that you just got done talking to today, about events that are happening in St. Louis?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, it's good to see their energy and their interest. These issues are very real. And they're hard and difficult issues that this country has grappled with for over 100 years. And the fact that young people are on the forefront of trying to continue to move this discussion forward so that we can live in a region.
Point is, it didn't matter because she wanted to show you that you were, that she knew what you were doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She wanted to make sure she knew that you were out there doing that stuff. And she wanted to make an example of you in front of the other kids.
What did you do when you heard your fellow teacher say that to your to Will, and you knew, you know Will, you knew that probably really got to him. What did you say to the other teacher?
Well, I'll tell you what. That day I didn't say anything. And to no end that day, I just was so upset. I was so upset. And most people would be like, you know, why didn't you? Obviously, you're out doing this. You're out obviously trying to champion. He's your kid. You're putting him out there. Why aren't you doing something? And I think it's because she was not just a teacher. She was my best friend. And it was devastating, devastating to me, because not only does she know what I'm doing, but it's obviously something so important to me, so important to me. And that day, I didn't stand up for Will, but I did turn around not but a couple hours and later, and I said, I know what happened. I know what happened. And that is an example of what is a racist. They might not know why they're a racist. They didn't know that they did that, but that truly is something. That I should have said that you're wrong to my friend. You shouldn't have done that to him. And I told that to Will, and it was important to me at least that I told him that and that I saw it. And so that's what I did that day. And then I told him the next thing, is that what you do and the power that you have is you tell your story. That's what you have power in. You get your mic and you tell your story and you say, this is what I can do. I can tell my story that this happened to me. And that's how we changed our world. And that's what we're here trying to do. We're trying to change our world by telling our story. And that's how you're going to move forward. So that's what we're doing. We're changing our world by telling our story. Yeah.
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 So to be honest, these kids are giving us hope. Hope that we can talk about race and not have people freak out.
But what about adults? One last time, let's go back to Professor Mendoza Denton.
I'm curious if it's easier for, you know, there to be a change in attitude with kids who are younger versus, say, adults.
I think that stands to reason. It's a question that I'm asked often, and my read of the literature is that that particular question has not been answered with 100% confidence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is basically people tend to think that adults, oh, they're lost causes. You know, once they have these beliefs, that's just how they are. But you're saying that the research actually doesn't bear that out.
I think that the way you described it is exactly correct. We have evidence to show that infants are more malleable with respect to their attitudes, in part because they take their cues from the adults around them, from the structures and environments around them, from the teachers around them, so that if their teachers, if the adults, if the community treats positive intergroup contact as the norm, they're more likely to grow up not just believing it, but instantiating it as part of their normal everyday routine.
Translation, this is cyclical, and the kids we heard from today say they don't want to inherit that cycle. But it's not just kids. A lot of adults are trying to break that cycle, too.
That requires talking about race openly. But the problem is, a lot of the time when we talk about race and class, we do it in code.
So next time on We Live Here, the codes of St. Louis. That's coming up on April 6th.
We Live Here is produced by me, Emmanuel Berry.
And me, Tim Lloyd. Sheila Newman is our editor extraordinaire, who texted us while editing this show, quotes,
Obama tweaking slightly.
A linguistic gift from the autocorrect gods.
And Margie Freivogel is the editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
Our theme music that you're listening to right now is produced by Casey Morgan. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.